So I have to say I'm really kind of surprised to see y'all here tonight. Such a cold night, it's nice to see you. It's kind of like being at the gym after New Year's, you know, everybody shows up. So I want to briefly mention 8 different retreat opportunities for you in 2018. And the details of all this are on our website, OneRiverWisdomNashville.org, and there are links to the various places that we'll be doing this. The last week in January, I'll be leading a centering prayer retreat, week-long retreat at St. Mary's in Suwannee, and I think there's some places that are still available for that retreat. If you're free for that retreat. Then Paloma Kane, my teaching colleague Paloma Kane, and I will be leading 2 Mindfulness on the Mountain retreats at St. Mary's, one in the spring and one in the fall. Paloma comes from Inside LA, and I just love teaching with Paloma. She's such a wonderful teacher. Weekend retreats, both of those. Alaska fisherman friend Kurt Holting and I will be leading a contemplative kayaking retreat in southeast Alaska in July. That's another week-long retreat. And it's just really the coolest thing on the planet. You don't have to be a veteran kayaker at all. This is not extreme sports. But it's really a great retreat, and Alaska is big medicine. Big wide open spaces of Alaska. So that link's on the website. Kurt's a Zen practitioner and congregational minister and real experienced outdoorsman. Then the other retreats I'll be doing with Rabbi Rami Shapiro, we'll be doing 3 One River retreats at St. Mary's, weekend retreats. And then Rami and I will be leading a trip to Israel October 4th through 14th. And this retreat has just been advertised for about a week or two, and it's already almost full. Spirituality and Health is the organization that's sponsoring this retreat. So if you would like to go to Israel, and I've never been to Israel before, I'm really looking forward to this retreat. But if you have a mind to come to Israel, take a look at that link on our website. So those are retreat opportunities. I got a email from Rami on New Year's Day, and he said, on New Year's Eve, I woke up around 3:20 this morning. I read a wonderful essay about Leonard Cohen that appeared in the New Yorker in October 2016, and then did my meditation. After that, I did what I always do as the year ends. I tried to figure out who I am. Not in the spiritual sense or the family sense, but in a more what do I stand for sense. And so Rami goes through different aspects of his being, a Jew, a rabbi, a teacher of perennial wisdom, a mystic. And then he has this to say about being a student of religion. He says, to me, religions are like languages. No language is true or false. Religions are like languages. No language is true or false. All languages are of human origin. Oh, here's a little ladybug who came to hear the Dharma. Right here on my hand. I'm going to put him up here with the Holy Family. Yeah, good. All languages, all human languages, all religious languages are of human origin. Each language reflects and shapes the civilization that speaks it. There are things that you can say in one language that you cannot say or say as well in another. And the more languages you speak, the more nuanced your understanding of life becomes. Judaism is my mother tongue. Yet in matters of religion, I strive to be multilingual. In the end, however, the deepest language of the spirit is silence. I think that captures our sense here of practicing being multilingual and dropping into this deep language of silence. Rami and I were born 2 days apart. We say we're brothers of another mother. And for those of you who know Rami, we could not be more different. Rami is brilliantly unbridled. And I'm sort of buttoned down, reserved. So there's this remarkable complementarity. It's kind of a union of opposites. And we just love teaching with each other. So I've been thinking about Rami's question to himself, his New Year's Eve question. Who am I? And what is it that I stand for? Rami is standing for this multilingual capacity in a time when religious tribalism is rampant, standing for, Richard Rohr would call it an alternative orthodoxy. I love that phrase. So what do I stand for? And who is this I that is standing? Who are you now? What are you standing for? Who is this you who is standing? It's worth reflecting on. You know, so as I reflect on this for myself, you know, conventionally I teach. Today at lunch I had lunch with Brad Joya, who's the headmaster of MBA, the boys' school that I went to here. And I'm going to start teaching mindfulness to teenage boys. It'll be interesting. And I'm not so much interested in teaching content. Rami is a great student, deeply insightful student of religious texts. And I can kind of run alongside him, but that's not my real gift. My real interest is not so much content as the context of consciousness. I'm interested in this knowing space of awareness, not so much what we know, but how we know. Mindfulness, lots of definitions for mindfulness, but one is just mindfulness is knowing our experience. Oh, being cold is like this. Having the ladybug come to the Dharma is like this. Feeling in my hands is like this. My experience of the holidays the aftermath of the holidays is like this. As I've listened to my early clients in these last couple of days after New Year's, one of the themes that I hear, and especially parents of children, is we're just all out of rhythm in our family. I'm trying to find my way back into some rhythm. What is this that knows the physical sensation, the embodied sensation of being just a little off, a little bit out of rhythm? What is this that knows this deep sense of being at home, rooted, relaxed, grounded? What knows all this? So I'm interested in inquiring, exploring, being with people who want to do this kind of inquiry. You know, I listen as a therapist. I study wisdom traditions. I really can't get enough of it. Maybe it's my addiction. People ask me, are you a Buddhist? Are you still a Christian? I really have no interest in these labels at all. But I am interested in what these wisdom teachers are pointing to. Right now, there is a body. There is breathing. There's hearing. Seeing. There's a whole world of sensation. If we turn and look and ask, what knows this seeing, this hearing, this sensing? What knows these thoughts? These thoughts that flow ceaselessly down the mind stream. Some getting recycled again and again. What is it that knows these feelings? These feelings about my life, where I stand. These feelings about our life together. How we're standing together, not standing together. What is it that knows all this content in consciousness? When we turn and look, we can't exactly find it, this that knows. But we know it's here. It's silent, it's mysterious, it's open. It rejects nothing. Whatever your experience, our experience is right now, it's altogether receptive. And it's just now. It's always here. Always now. this awake presence. That's beyond naming and yet has so many lovely names. Allah. You know, in Islam they have the 99 names of Allah. Sometime I'll do a talk on the 99 names of Allah. Judaism has many names for God. One is HaMakom, which means the place. I like that. It's the place of ising. It's the place where everything is happening. And that place is always here, always now. There are two paths to this place. We could call them, Rupert Spira calls them, the path of exclusion and the path of inclusion. The path of exclusion simply looks at contents in consciousness. You know, I'm a father, a grandfather, a teacher, a therapist, and whatever these contents in consciousness are, you know, I'm sad, I'm happy, I'm delighted, I'm disturbed. Whatever these contents in consciousness are, the witness steps back from these and says, the Hindu words are neti neti, not this, not this. You know, whatever your work is, whatever your sexual orientation is, whatever your history, the 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows of your life. There is more to you than all this. And so when we watch these thoughts, we're so identified with our thoughts, especially our opinions. We're entangled in our opinions. Here comes an opinion down the mind stream, and we can say, neti neti, not this. What a relief to not be your opinions and to not see someone else as their opinions. And feelings, we're so deeply identified with our feelings. They're maybe even stronger than our thoughts, our opinions. So a feeling may characterize any moment or maybe a season of moments, a mood. My depression. My disorientation, my dis-ease, my being at sea. Neti neti. Not this. The path of exclusion, the witness stands back from all these contents and says, there's more to you than that. When we step back, we get literally some breathing room. We're so up close, we're so entangled, we're so identified with. It's hard to get any breathing room. I have to say, it was so lovely standing up here, watching us do this movement together, sharing this movement, sharing this breath in this room. And then, of course, we're not only identified with thoughts and not only with feelings, but with these bodies. Let your eyes for a moment just gently close. The visual field is so large in our awareness. Let your eyes gently close. You know, we have a thought of a body. We have an idea of my body. But let yourself tune into simple raw sensation. Where your sits bones, the backs of your legs, make contact with the seat, the pew. Let your attention go there. And see if you can actually discern a space between yourself and the seat. See if it isn't one seamless continuum. This sensation that's in awareness, in consciousness. And likewise, where does the space that surrounds our bodies? Where does this space begin and end? Where does the body begin and end? Simply at a sensory level. See if it isn't all one seamless. Happening. So you can let your eyes gently come open. There really is a seamlessness between contents in awareness and awareness itself. So if the first move is a step back into the witness, and we see this distinction between contents and consciousness, the path of inclusion says, no, actually, these things are so intimately joined. There is no separation at all. When we rest down into, let's take just the experience of the cold in this sanctuary. If you don't have gloves on, just feeling the cold of your hands. Letting this cold rest in consciousness. And if there's any resistance to the cold, if there's seeking of warmth, let that too just rest in consciousness. Just now. And see if your relationship to the cold doesn't shift. These are just probes. They're little mindfulness probes. Little probes in consciousness. Awareness actually pervades. It saturates our experience. But so often we're focused on the contents in consciousness. We're not aware of this background awareness. We say background, but it's actually pervading everything. And it feels different when we're aware of both content and consciousness. We've done this before, but Let one hand just hover over the other. Let's say the upper hand is content and the lower hand is consciousness. And then just let these rest upon each other. Everything is resting in consciousness all the time. It's the small self, the separate I, the illusory separate self that is not resting. When we're not at rest, we're identified with the separate self. That's suffering. When we rest in this larger space of awareness, there is no suffering there. There might be pain, there might be physical pain, there might be relational pain. But it's actually at rest in this space, it being held in a different way. So there are more things that I had planned to say, but I think in the entrance of not pushing our limits, I think I'll begin to wrap up this evening. I want to read a little piece. I've read this any number of times before. It comes from Ajahn Sumedho, who is my teacher, Philip Moffitt's teacher. And he's talking about this awareness in which everything is resting all the time. That's what Ajahn Sumedho says. He's the Westerner who has been in Buddhist monk's robes longer than anyone else. Awareness is your refuge. Awareness of the changingness of feelings, of attitudes, of moods, of material change and emotional change. Stay with that awareness because it is a refuge that is indestructible. It's not something that changes. It's a refuge you can trust in. This refuge is not something that you create. It's not a creation. It's not an ideal. It's very practical and very simple, but easily overlooked and not noticed. When you're mindful, you're beginning to notice. It's like this. Oh, having cold hands, like this. So let's sit for a moment. So it's our practice at the end of our time together to share some friendly wishes, wishes of loving kindness. And we offer these first to ourselves and to one another. Letting these wishes ripple around the space. May you be free from fear. May you be free of obsession. May you dwell in peace. May you rest in love. and imagine it so. Imagine that every cell of your body is free from fear, free of obsession. Dwelling in peace, resting in love. And for everyone around you, feel into the space around you. And then feeling into the space inside your own body. And let them be one space, interpenetrating. And so we send these wishes out to our dear ones, those we hold in our hearts, to our teachers, those who have helped us along our path, to strangers, to difficult persons. To all beings without exception, may all beings be free from fear. May all beings be free from obsession. May all beings dwell in peace. May all beings rest in love. We dedicate the merit of our practice this evening to the welfare of all beings, to the arising of happiness and peace and joy, and to the ending of suffering. So thank you for your kind attention. I also want to thank a number of you made year-end gifts to One River on our website. And I just want to tell you how grateful I am to you and how much it helps us pay the rent. Hopefully the boiler will be fixed next week and it'll be a little warmer. So have a great week. See you next week.